ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणचक्षुः श्रोत्रमथो बलम इन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वं ब्रह्मोपनिषदं माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्यां मा ब्रह्म निराकरोद् अनिराकरणमस्तु अनिराकरणं मे अस्तु तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः लास्ट् वीक् वि सॉ द स्टोरी सीमिङ्ग्लि प्रि चैल्डिश् And today we will see the deeper meaning of that story. Because there has been a gap, I will just repeat the story and then we are going to go into chapter. We'll go into first three verses of the next chapter, chapter four. And then we go into the deeper meaning of the, because then it kind of ends at three verses in chapter four, and after that there is a commentary by Shruti. So anyway, as the story went, there were the gods and the asuras, and of course in those days we can say as the devatas and the asuras, but I've told you asusu ramante iti asuraha. Asura is a person who is rebelling in the pranas. Asusu is pranas, and pranas meaning body. So the one who is identified with his body, very much identified with his body, is an asura. So there are asuras even today. It is not like they're rakshasas where they have horns on the head and not any. They're like ordinary people like you and me. But if that attitude is an attachment to the body, then it is known as asura. Anyway, there was a fight between the devas and the asuras, and the devas won, and it gave them a lot of arrogance. Because they thought that they had won the victory on their own prowess. So they were having a party. And suddenly, there was a divine personality standing outside and nobody knew who he was. So Agni, the god of fire, the deity of fire, was asked to go out and find out who this Yaksha was. Shruti says it was a Yaksha. Yaksha, Kinnara, Gandharva, these are all various bodies, various forms of bodies. Not like our mortal body, but they are various forms. So there was a Yaksha standing outside and Agni was asked to go out. And the Yaksha asked, who are you? So that was actually a little bit of a blow to Agni, because is there somebody in this universe that doesn't know me? He says, I don't know, who are you? He says, I'm Agni. And the Yaksha says, what do you do? So that was another blow to his ego, because how come anybody not know what fire does? And he says, I am capable of burning everything. Is that right? Sure. Why don't you burn this blade of grass? And Agni cannot do it. So Agni goes back and Vayu is sent, and the same dialogue happens, and his ego is pricked as well. And he is asked to blow away the blade of grass, because he says, I can blow away anything in this universe. Really? Fine. Blow the blade of grass. And he cannot do it. So he goes back, and then Indra is asked to go out. Indra is the king of the deities. So Indra is asked to go out, but the minute Indra goes out, the Yaksha disappears from his sight. And all of a sudden, there is a woman. He sees a woman standing there who is Uma Devi, and that was the end of chapter 3. And in that very spot, he beheld a woman, Uma, the damsel fair, the daughter of the snowy mountain Himavan. He asked her who this adorable spirit could be. That's where we had stopped. So this is the story, and now let's go into the verse 1 of the next chapter. sa brahmeti hovacha brahmano va etad vijaye mahiyadvamiti tato haiva vidanchakara brahmeti. Preceptor, Brahman, she explained. Because the preceptor, Gurudev has put, because this story is being told by the Guru to the Shishyas. Please don't forget that. The students who remain. Remember the whole Upanishad? First, the highest teaching was given. So some students came back and said that, oh, I know it. And they were asked to meditate again. So then they came back and they said, yeah, it feels like I know, but yet I think I don't know. And the Guru said that that is how it should be really recognized. And so the idea is that some of the students left, and then the Guru told them how to meditate. The remaining students were told how to meditate. Remember, we had that verse where we said, go beyond the thought, go to the source of the thought, etc. So when the meditation instructions were given, when the instructions how to meditate were given, more students realized and they left. Once they did meditation as per that, they went to the source of the thought, they went to the substratum, and they realized and they went away. But still there were some students left. Now the Guru says, okay, I have come two levels. Now I have to come down to the third level because these students are still not understanding. So I have to tell them in a simple form. And that's why the story is being told. And that's why this word comes here, preceptor, the Guru. Brahman, she explained. Okay? Indeed, through Brahman's victory have you gained greatness. Then alone he understood that the adorable spirit Yaksha was Brahman. So the idea here is that Uma Devi, she is Shruti. She represents Shruti. She represents Brahma Vidya. Okay? And the story by itself, the way it goes is, this Brahma Vidya is revealed now to Indra, who is the king of the deities, who asked her in all humility, okay? And then he understands, because she tells him that all your deities have the arrogance that we won it on our prowess. You need to understand that you cannot do anything without the presence of the pure consciousness. And he understands. Then, We'll go back and see the deeper meanings, but this is how it is going now. Tasmadva ete deva atitara mivanyan devan yadagnir vayuhu indraha tehenane tishtam pasprashuste henata prathamo vidanchakara brahmeti. Therefore, verily these gods, Agni, Vayu and Indra, excel the other gods. The reason it's said that they excel, for they approach the spirit, the manifestation of the Supreme, the nearest, and they were the first to know him as Brahman. So Agni was the first one to even look at the Yaksha. The other gods didn't even come out, right? So Agni and Vayu and Indra came to know him. At least Agni and Vayu saw him. They didn't come to know who he exactly was, but at least they had the chance to see him. So they are considered a little bit superior to the other gods. And then, of course, Indra, the most superior, because he actually came to know who this Yaksha was. And he got the knowledge directly from the Divine Mother, Uma. Tasmadva Indro Titara Miva Nyan Devan Sahenane Dishtam Pasparsha Sahenata Prathamo Vidanchakara Brahmeti. And therefore, indeed, Indra excels other gods, for he approached the spirit nearest and he was the first to know him as Brahman. Okay, so among the gods, Agni and Vayu are a little bit superior because at least they got a vision of that Yaksha. And Indra is even more superior because vision is not enough. He actually came to know. So this is where the story ends. We'll read one more verse, 4. Tasesha adesho yate yade tada vidyuto vyadyutada iti nyami mishada ityadhi devatam. This is the description of Brahman, description by means of an illustration. He shone forth like the splendor of the lightning. He disappeared within the twinkling of the eye. This is the comparison of the Brahman with reference to the Devas, his manifestation as cosmic powers. Adi Bhautik. Actually, four is, we can do it next time. But anyway, now let us go back to the story. So it is said that Agni and Vayu, the subjective meaning of Agni and Vayu. Agni is the presiding deity of speech. Okay. And Vayu is the presiding deity of touch, means skin. So speech represents all the organs of action. I've told you that when one organ is mentioned, they represent the whole clan. So speech being both, of course, perception as well as action. But here we have to take it as action, because perception is being represented by Vayu, skin. Okay, so Vayu representing all the organs of perception, Agni representing all the five organs of action, both of them could not know the Yaksha, which means that you cannot attain pure consciousness through the organs of action nor the organs of perception. That is the deeper meaning of this story, that the eyes, the sense organs are as though cursed by the manufacturer, the creator, Brahmaji. Pranchakhani Kathopinishad says that they are as though cursed to go outward. And that is why they are incapable of knowing Brahman. So that is why no amount of action or just reading, like through your getting knowledge, and you can get knowledge of the Upanishads also through the books, but that is not enough to gain the final realization. That is what is one meaning of this. Okay. Now, Agni and Vayu, if you take them as the devatas, as the gods, as the deities, they came out and they have the power to burn and to blow away, but yet they could not burn or blow away that blade of grass. That blade of grass became like a strong steel, whatever, you know. So the idea is that the devatas do not have the final power. That is to be understood. Because the reason this is, we say this, is because there are people who actually worship the deities. They worship the deities thinking that the deities are supreme and that the deities will give me this. And we see this illustrated in Bhagavad Puran, where all the people were preparing to do yajna, to pray to Indra. Why? Because Krishna, Bhagavan Krishna was a little child and he said, why, what is all this preparation for? And his mother says, oh, we have to do yajna for Indra. Why? Because Indra is the one that gives us rains. Right? And yes, Indra is the one that gives rains. But what has to be remembered is that the power to give rain has been given by the Supreme Reality. So if that is forgotten, and that's what happened with Indra, and that's what happened with Agni and Vayu and these devas, that we have the power to burn or to blow away or to do whatever, it has been given to us. It is not our inherent power. If the power is given to us, it can be withdrawn. And therefore, the idea is that only the Supreme Reality should be worshipped, not the devatas. You can worship the devatas, but keep in mind that it is not the final abode. There are very many people who worship the deities. That, I mean, own Krishna's own parents were worshipping the deities, right? So these deities were now getting arrogance. And what happens is when you worship the deities, as many more people worship, that much his power increases. It's like, you know, in the election, if there are two people, then how many votes this person gets, if he gets more votes, he becomes more powerful because he's holding that many more votes. It's exactly like that. So when you do Indraya Swaha, so say thousands of people are doing Indraya Swaha, you know, in the offering oblations in the fire, saying this is for Indra, this is, then Indra becomes very powerful. If they're saying Vayu Swaha, Agni Swaha, then that deity is becoming powerful. And then what happens is they become powerful because of these prayers, and now they get arrogant that I am doing this. This is what we do too. In our individual life, I do something and then I think, I'm the one that did it. And I forget that it is because of the Supreme Reality. I wouldn't even have been breathing if you simple thing like, you know, people 1 minute this thing, second minute finished. Just how 50, I don't know how many of you, 54 year old actress, just massive heart attack, Sridevi, gone. 54 years, right? So you don't know. So that's why that arrogance should not be there. So this is part of the story, that the deities must not be, they that's what happened to them. And that's why the Yaksha came to remove their arrogance. The blade of grass, even in Tulsi Ramayana, there is an episode where Ram and Sitaji were in the forest in exile, and Indra's son Jayant, Indra is a son called Jayant. So Jayant had this doubt, is this really Lord Rama, the Lord, the Supreme Reality, or is it just a fake, you know, going around in the forest and all that? So he took the form of a crow and he went and pecked at Sitaji's foot. He pecked the foot. So Bhagwan plucked a blade of grass and threw it at him, flung it at him. So that blade of grass became like an arrow and started chasing the crow. And the crow went into the three worlds, and the arrow wouldn't let go of him, right? So he finally went to Narad Bhagwan. He said, what should I do? He says, he is the Supreme Reality. Go surrender to him because it's his weapon. Only he can pull it back. So the idea is that the Supreme Reality can make even a blade of grass that powerful. That is what is being said here. That a blade of grass could not be burnt by Agni and could not. So if Agni and Vayu could not even do anything to a blade of grass, who are we to do anything in life? That doesn't mean we shouldn't do. We should do. But keep the thought in mind that thank you, Lord. It's because of you that this has happened. Thank you, Gurudev. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, whoever, Ishta Devata. That thing has to be in the back of the mind. That will keep the ego in check. Because the whole idea of recognizing the Supreme Reality is to negate the ego. So at least if we don't let it increase and increase and increase, each time we do something like, yeah, I did it, I did it. So that should be kept in mind. Okay? Now, Indra is the king of the deities, the devatas. And the mind is, Indra represents the mind. Mind is the king of the senses, right? Because it is the mind that receives all the sense perceptions from the sense organs. Each organ, I've always told you, has its own specific function, eyes, color and form, ear, sound, etc. So all these perceptions go into the mind and the mind coordinates them all and then makes a decision as to what is being seen, what is out there. And then the mind sends response to the organs of action to do. So see a flower, okay. I want that flower, pluck the flower. Okay, don't pluck the flower. Give it to somebody, don't give it to somebody. All these things are, the mind is coordinating it all. So mind is also known as the sixth sense. Mind is also called the sixth sense, and it is the king of the senses. So Agni and Vayu, if you take them as deities, then Indra is the king. If you take them as the presiding deities of the organs of action and organs of perception, then it is Indra represents the mind. Now, when the mind goes out, the Yaksha disappears. Idea is that you can never get a vision. You can never see the Supreme Reality as an object. Therefore, the Supreme Reality, boom, disappears. The mind cannot see. But the mind now is not gone there in arrogance. Indra has gone with a curiosity. Let me find out who this is that my Agni and Vayu Devata couldn't find out. Let me. So there is humility. When Indra goes out, there is humility. And therefore, the Guru stands in front of him. So when the mind surrenders in all humility, the Guru will come to give you this knowledge. And who is the Guru here? Sakshat Uma Devi, Himavan, the daughter of Himavan, right? Parvati. And she represents Brahma Vidya. And Shruti will reveal herself to those people who are genuinely looking for this knowledge. So in Kathopinishad, again, Shruti says that I reveal this knowledge to those who choose me exclusively. Generally, we want God, but we want other things and we want God also. We need to choose God exclusively. That is when Shruti, our Acharya used to say, Shruti is very protective of the knowledge. So you might feel like so many people are listening to this knowledge, but you don't know what kind of effect it is having inside their mind. Okay, so she's very progressive. So now what is happening is, because their mind has approached her with humility and with curiosity, not with arrogance. Let me find out who it is. Not that attitude. Who is this? Right? So cannot get an objective view of the supreme reality. So the yaksha disappears and the guru comes, and then she gives that knowledge and she makes him understand that, know that all your powers are coming from him, from the supreme reality. So that is also a takeaway for us, that all my, if I'm speaking, if I'm listening, if I'm, you know, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, or doing anything, that power is coming from the Lord. And therefore, that Lord should be thanked. All right. Now, the supreme reality, which is nirgun nirakara, right? It's can never have a form. Took a form of yaksha, which means that avatars are possible. There are people who do not believe in avatars. They think that Krishna is a Mahapurusha or a great person, but not an avatar of the Lord. So the when it is said that the yaksha stood in front of them and Agni saw the yaksha, that means that the supreme reality is capable of taking a form. If it chooses, it has the power to take a form and show it. And it has been done. There have been visions of Sri Rama given to Sant Ramdas. Lord Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Devi used to come talk to him. Namdev we have. Vithal Bhagwan used to come and talk to him. So he is the Supreme Lord. Understand that the Supreme Reality is the Supreme Lord. Sarva Shakti Man means anything he can do. If he wants a blade of grass to become like an arrow, it will become like an arrow. If he wants to take a form, he can take a form. If he doesn't want to take a form, if he wants to disappear, he can disappear. If he wants to appear, he can appear. So the people who do not believe in avatars should know that no, the Supreme Reality can appear as a form. Okay, now other reason for this story is also, like, some people think that there is no God. You know, they just don't believe in the existence of God. So the idea is that if you look, this is Bhagwan Shankaracharya just commented on this story. I don't know if I told you, Kena Upanishad is one Upanishad where Bhagwan wrote two commentaries. He wrote one commentary and then he was not very happy with it. So he wrote a second commentary. So not sure from which commentary this is, but anyway, what he says is, for those of us who do not believe in the existence of God, okay, fine, you cannot see God. Do you see the world? Do you see the universe? Do you see the creation? Now that they cannot deny. I see the mountains, the trees, you know, the rains, the hurricanes, everything, all this they cannot deny. So if you look at the vastness of creation, like how, you know, we have to create something, how much knowledge we need, how much material we need, right? How much effort we have to put in. So imagine this vast creation, which you know for sure that you didn't create. That nobody can say, yeah, I only created this create. No, because it was there when you were born. Who created it then? From the vastness of the creation, the vastness of the creator must be presumed. It has to be. I didn't do it. I know whoever people or friends that I have, or even enemies that I have, I know they could not have done it. So there is somebody out there who has created this. So that should also trigger a thought that there is a creator. If he can create this vast universe, why can't he do so many other things? Just from a general point of view, you know. Then there are some people who say that karma kandins, those were the ones that Bhagwan Shankaracharya had most discussions with, because they believe in the Vedas. But they say that karma can do anything and everything. And that is why in the Karmakanda portion, there are so many rituals that are given. And by rituals, you can get anything. And the Vedanta portion, the Upanishads that are there, they are ornamental. They think they're like alankar. You know, they're like to decorate the yajna. They will chant Ishavasya. They will chant Kathopanishad. Kathopanishad, generally, when person dies, then they chant Kathopanishad. So they believe that these Vedantic mantras are for decorating my yajna. So you know how we have, then we'll have a singing pro, so they'll have the yajna and then somebody will be chanting Ishavasya, somebody, and that's it. There's no need to go deeper into those meanings. That is the purpose of Vedanta. So they think that karma is the be all and end all of life. Karma can do anything. But the question arises is that because they say that karma itself is the giver of life, because there is no God. Karma can do anything, right? So if karma can do anything, is it only karma? There is something, some other factor. Because the same karma done by two people yields different results. If I plant a seed and you plant a seed, somebody else plants a seed, not necessary that both seeds will come up, will sprout. If we have both done the same action, if a whole bunch of us go into the same shop at the same time, buy the same lottery ticket, do you think that everybody is going to win the same prize? Some will win, some will not win, some will win more, some will win less, right? So karma itself, if it is giving result, then the same karma done by two people should give the same result. Why not? Karma is giving result, right? Therefore, in Upadesh Sar, Bhagwan Raman Maharshi has, first he says, karma kim param karma tajjadam. How come you say that karma is supreme? Karturadnyaya prapyate phalam. So he brings in the creator there. That there is a creator. There is somebody besides the karma and besides the karta who is the giver of results. Should not be understood that the giver of results is doing it randomly. What happens in karma is there is an effort that I put forth in this life, which I can see. I know what effort I've put through. But there is something that I have done in the past, which I don't know. That thing in the past, if it is conducive, if it is favorable to what I'm doing now, that result will come that I'm asking for. And if it is not favorable, then that result is not going to come. That is how karma works. Okay? There is another set of people who think that the karta gives the result, the doer. I did it, so I am the one. But if I am the giver of result, if the doer is, will I ever get results which I don't like or which I didn't want? What is my experience? That every action that I did in life got same result came that I was expecting? I wouldn't give up. It's like, you know, if I write the question paper and I only answer it, I can even fail. Like, if will I ever give me less marks, give myself less marks or fail myself? Karta cannot, the doer has got nothing to do. Nothing to do with the result. Means what? The doer has only got power over the karma, over the action. So the doer must do the action to the best of his ability. But the doer or the action itself has no bearing on the result. What result will come, both of these cannot decide. Neither the doer nor the action itself. Because if they were the deciding factors, every time, whatever action I do, the result would be exactly as I wanted. Every time I buy a lottery ticket, I have to win. That's why I'm buying a lottery ticket. Does that happen? No. That means somebody else is controlling that. Okay? So these are some subtle points from this story. Because like Gurudev himself has written, it's a seemingly childish story, but it's not very childish. It is not childish at all, actually. It has got a very, very deep meaning. So if you can, so the students are being now told that that supreme reality is the ultimate reality. All right, this is what it is. Any questions so far? No, it's clear. Everything's clear. Okay, Those are the few subtle points from that story. Now, we come to 4. We have already read it. So he shone forth like the splendor of the lightning, and he disappeared within the twinkling of an eye. So this is, see, there are 3 levels: Adhyatmik, Adibhautik, and Adidaivik. We have seen that Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. This is from the Adibhautik point of view. What happens is, there are periods in our life where we experience that extreme bliss. Not in deep sleep. Deep sleep, we are always experiencing. That is not what it is. But even there is a complete peace. There is a complete poise that comes over us. We become very peaceful. I'm sure all of you have experienced. Very rare it is, but it does. So that is what is being said here. That when that happens, that peace, we may attribute it to something outside. Generally, we do. We say, ha, ha, ha. Now I got possession of my flat. Now I'm very peaceful. We always attribute it to outside. But what it is the supreme reality. Because the peace, the real peace is only in there. So like lightning, like a flash of lightning, sometimes we experience it. But then within a flash of a second, it goes away. From the blinking of an eye, nimish. Nimish is, you know, how long does it take, a fraction of a second for us to blink the eye? It vanishes. Okay, so this is the illustration is what that Yaksha, he came and he just disappeared. This is what outside, the story, gross story is what the Yaksha was there and suddenly he came like lightning and he suddenly disappeared, right? So what Shruti, all these now, these verses are commentary by Shruti. So Shruti is commenting, like, understand that because we will, in our life, we will never see some Yaksha standing outside our door. That is not possible. That will not happen. But you will see it internally if you are aware of it. When that peace dawns on you, when you are calm in situations which would trigger agitation, you know, God forbid you're in an accident, something happens in life, some report comes, you know, you're this thing, but you are able to remain calm. If you are able to remain calm. That calmness is coming from the supreme reality. That must be understood as that Yaksha standing outside the door. Physically, there will never be anything like that. But because you see, Brahman is all inter. We have to recognize him in the cave of our heart. Okay? So those are the times when you recognize that Yaksha or that Brahman or that supreme reality within you. And unfortunately for us, because we are not yet abiding in that knowledge, it goes away. For a realized master, it will not happen like lightning and goes away. It will be there. That Brahma Vidya will always, because that realized master is established in that Vidya. It will stay. But this is for us, because this is for the students. So the Shruti is telling the students that what Yaksha, what we talked about is this. Okay? All right? Next. Let me see if there's any other point. For the understanding, huh? Yeah. What my notes are telling me is that, yeah, this is for students who are still not as, like, a comparison is given. Brahman cannot be compared to anything, but a comparison just for the understanding of the student, like just as you see the flash of lightning in the sky, that way you will see it within yourself in the form of calmness. It won't be like a lightning shock inside, not like that, but in the form of calmness that will come over you in circumstances which would normally agitate. Okay. And it's to be this thing. Fine. Just as which I've already told you, but what it is we see here that in chapter 1, Acharya gave Upadesh, teaching, year of the year, eye of the year, eye, etc. These are my notes. So there were many disciples, and not all of them were of the same caliber. I told you that they were all different. Some of them understood just by listening to the principle and went away. All right, they understood, they meditated, they went away. Some needed additional help. So Shruti in chapter 2 guided them to concentrate on the thoughts. I told you that. Some left meditating, then they remained and they concentrated on the thoughts and they reached Brahman through that gateway, through the gateway of the mind. Then they left. Then some others needed more, and so Shruti illustrated the principle in story form, the same principle. Just like in Balvihar, you will have to tell the principle in story form. So those who are doing Balvihar, teaching Balvihar, we teach Balvihar children through stories. All right? Okay. Now what is happening is, now listening to this story, some more students have left, and still some more students are remaining. And that is why now Shruti is giving illustrations. And this is the first illustration that she has given. That it's like lightning. It's like a flash of lightning. And it will disappear within the this. So this is the Adibhautik. Adibhautik, why? Adibhautik is what? Lightning is, again, fire. Agni. Okay? So from Adibhautik level, so the deities... And now she talks about in verse 5 from the adhyatmic level. So she gives is a comparison to the adhyatma within the self. Athadhyatmam yate tad gacchati vacha mano nena chaita dupasmaratya bhikshana sankalpaha. Now, as regards this description from the point of view of his manifestation as Atman within the body, as one thinks of Brahman by the mind and as speedily as the mind wills. So this illustration now is to give within. And what is being said is that, there are two words, Atman and Brahman. Okay, Atman and Brahman are synonyms. They are same. But when we refer to the entire universe, the supreme reality is referred to as Brahman. But if I'm referring to the individual self within the body, then it is called as Atman. Atma. Aham. But they're same. Atma and Brahman are same. But Atma, when we say, it's referring to the individual soul in an individual body. And Brahman is the general, the complete substratum. Okay, this thing. So this is what is being said. And here, what it is manonena. The mind is constantly thinking of objects. So this is also a way of meditating also. So the mind is thinking of objects and is used to thinking of objects. So the idea is that you objectify Brahman. It's okay. But you think of Brahman alone. Because the mind is so used to doing. Now, suddenly if you tell the mind that don't think of the objects, then what is going to happen? The mind is not going to be able to do it. So instead of that, you think of Brahman as an object. And because you're so used to thinking of objects, you continuously think of Brahman alone. So this is all Upanishad, it's knowledge. But if you take it from a bhakti point of view, that is what the bhakta does. Na? He thinks of his Ishta Devata. Here, because it is knowledge, they will only say Brahman. Shruti never says Ram and Sita. You know, there was no Vedas are from the or primordial times. So there is no mention of Rama and Krishna and all these things in the Upanishads. There will never be a mention of the form. So she will say Brahman. But if you want to take it at our level also, what we can do is we can think of any Ishta Devata. Only thing is you must have the understanding that it is a representation of the Supreme Reality. You must not think that this is only Krishna, this form, and only I like him, and now he is not same as Rama, and he is superior to Rama, and he is superior. Those type of thoughts must not be going through the mind. Then you're allowed. But otherwise, because Brahman becomes general, right? There's no form. when you think of Brahman, Brahati is big. So there is really no form. And if you can do that, if you can think of the formless, then yes, go ahead. But problem is, we are not at that level. We are still not at that level. So you give it a form. And of course, the form which you like the most, you will keep thinking most of most. So whatever form that you are familiar with, that you like, you give that form to this Brahman and objectify it and think about it. So within, adhyatmik, within yourself. Okay? Brahman gets my day. So the idea here is, because the students that are left or whoever students were there, they want to know Brahman. Now another method is being given. One illustration was given of lightning and the eyes closing. And in it was not outside. It's the light of consciousness, which you will feel within as that peace and poise. Now, if you want, you're used to the mind. Right? You're used to the mind thinking of objects, objectify Brahman and keep thinking of Brahman. And I've already told you this, because I am Brahman is a thought, but Brahman itself is self-illumining. So what will happen is that I am Brahman thought will become so subtle that only Brahman will remain, and that I am will vanish, or only I will remain. It will become subtle. The thought becomes, see, the thoughts are very gross. Actually, what we say is thought is very subtle. Why do we say that? Because what is gross is seen by the senses, and the mind is not seen, means your mind is not seen by me or my mind. So it is subtle. But to me, understand that to me, myself, my thoughts are not subtle. I can see them now. I see my own mind, right? I mean, see means not physically see, but I know what thought is going through my mind. And therefore, to me, my thoughts are not subtle. Please understand. We say thoughts are subtle. We say that because the senses cannot see the thoughts, but you understand that you yourself know. How do I know my thoughts? It's because of the presence of Supreme Consciousness. Sakshi, thoughts are Sakshi Bhasya. Please remember that. Sakshi Bhasya means the witness principle. The Atman, which is within me, that is the one that is illumining the thoughts, and that Atman itself is the one that is illumining the thought. I knew nothing when I wake up. How do I remember that I had deep sleep? Somebody has to be there, no? The experiencer only remembers. So this Atman, this Sakshi is there in deep sleep. And this Sakshi is there in waking as well. And this Sakshi in the waking state is who is recognizing the thoughts which are going through my mind. Is that clear? Sakshi Bhasya. See, we say Sakshi for Brahman when there is something else, right? And right now there is a thought, and therefore that Brahman, that Atman is called as Sakshi. If there is nothing to be witnessed, then there is no Sakshi. Then it is not called Sakshi. But right now we call it Sakshi. We are calling it Sakshi for our understanding, because there are thoughts which are being illumined. Right? And therefore, these thoughts, to me, they are not subtle. They are gross. Because I know them. And the other thing that makes a thought gross is the object that I'm thinking about. So if the object is gross, then the thought also is gross. Okay? If the object is subtle, thought also has to be subtle. It is subtle. Now what is happening is, now I have objectified Brahman and I have made it into an object, and now I'm saying I am that object. You know, constantly we keep attaching ourselves to, I'm attached to my house and my children and this and that and all that. So now I have removed all those other thoughts from my mind. I've substituted it with Brahman and I'm saying I am Brahman. So this thought is also, it is subtle. It is gross because I know it, but among, in comparison to the thoughts of objects, this thought is subtle. It is all comparative, okay? So at one level, we'll say thoughts are subtle. Yes, they are subtle because they cannot be seen by the senses. Nobody else can know my thought. So it is subtle. But do I know my own thought? Yes, I know. Then is it subtle to me? No, it is not. It's not subtle to me. I know it. And this I, when I say I know my thought, that I is the Sakshi Bhasya. Because that Sakshi Bhasya is also illumining the small I, the ego, which is saying that I know this and that and that. It's very, it becomes very complicated going as you go inside. All right. So let's leave that for a while. Now get it into Brahman, get it into I am Brahman mode. And in the seat of meditation, when you become very, very single pointed to this thought will, the I am will merge. The triad will merge. Okay. Because there is I and then there is Brahman and then there is the seeing. So that triangle is there, right? There is one corner is the thinker, the meditator. Then the object of meditation, which is now Brahman. And then there is a connection between the two because this meditator is thinking about that object which is meditated upon. So there are three things that are there. Out of these three things, what can disappear? Can Brahman disappear? Brahman can never disappear, correct. So what can disappear is the ego. Now who is the one that is saying, I am Brahman? It is ego. It is the ego, okay? And the and this is known by the meditator that I am doing. And that knowing by the meditator, there are two eyes there. There is the small eye, which is saying, I am Brahman, which is ego, which is the ego. And then there is a Sakshi, which knows that the ego is saying, I am Brahman. Inside all this goes on. Think about this. Think about this. See, you say, I am Brahman. And don't I know that I'm saying I am Brahman? There are two eyes there. There is one small eye which is saying, I am Brahman. Same way, I am Jaya. When I say, I am Jaya, I am talking, I am seeing, I have the computer on. That is the ego. But even subtler than that, there is an awareness that I am saying all this. That is Sakshi. That is Sakshi. So this I am Brahman in this thing, this I will disappear. The ego I, because I means Brahman, and that Brahman only will remain. So the Sakshi at that point will not remain a Sakshi. Why? Because there is nothing to be witnessed. Only Brahman will remain. And that time that Sakshi and Brahman will merge. It is the same. But right now what is happening is because this small ego is in play, the small I is at play, that I am Brahman thought is being, is Sakshi Bhasya. It is being known by the Sakshi within. Very subtle point. Think about this. So there are actually these two eyes at play inside us. There is one eye which is speaking. And then there is that other eye which knows that this small eye is speaking at all points. This is thinking, subtle thinking. We don't recognize, we say, I speak, finish. I is finished there. It's not. It's not. So this is what here he, when she says Adhyatma, that's why this language is very mystic. You know, like if you read just like that, then what is this? So this is the means to know Brahman. This is what she's saying. Now go through the mind. Because the mind is nothing but Brahman. Mind is a disturbance. What is thoughts? Thoughts is a disturbance in the layer of that consciousness. on that substratum, when there is a disturbance, it is called mind, it is called thought, it is called vikalpa, sankalpa vikalpa. Okay, so instead of having these many, many objects, you reduce it to one object, which is Brahman. And this method is given because our mind is very much used to thinking of objects, so that it will be easy for the mind. These are, take whichever method you want. Huh? If you're ready, think of the final subject, then that is not even Sakshi or anything. That is final sub. The first meditation that Shruti told, go meditate. There is one subject which is the same subject which is seeing this. Reach it there. But if we are not capable, if our mind is not capable, then in between she told thoughts, think of the thought, think of the source of thought. Now she's, what she's saying is, you make that thought into I am Brahman thought. And then keep at it. Okay. We will stop here today. We will go on, we'll complete this text. But even if you find this later portion a bit difficult to understand, even if you remember the story, right, it'll help you in your sadhana. See, we are all sadhaks, we are all seekers, we are trying, we are on this path, right? So we are not that way. I mean, if any one of us can do this higher meditation, please go ahead. Do it. I'm not saying not doing it or anything, okay? But the point is to keep the, to annihilate the ego is the point, actually. Annihilate it, completely destroy it, right? Not possible at this stage, so at least keep it under check. And this is a very, very simple story to remember. Like I told you, I heard this more than 25 years ago. And that is the thing that I have kept with me all these years. That if a blade of grass cannot, you know, move without the Lord's will, then I can't do anything either. Point is that Agni, you know, powerful deities could not burn it, right? So that's why. So if we can even keep that, but we will see the whole this thing, text. Very beautiful text. Actually, it's giving me a lot of insights into this thing. So it's good. Thank you for choosing this. Actually, very honestly, when first Ashok said to me, you know, Keno, I'm like, oh God, do I have to do Keno finish? I thought, no, I shouldn't be doing that. I should study. And I've actually enjoyed it. So I'm actually doing it at Manpower now. Because I'm like, okay, now I need more revision. Because even I find that even when I speak, I get ideas. So when I do it in Manpower, it won't be like very different, but it could be a little bit different. So that's what. Anyway, anyone has any questions?
Yeah, Ji, I have two questions. One question is about, you just said that sometimes Brahman will come like a flash when we feel that peace in our mind, peace in our mind. And you gave the example of the accident, and sometimes it happens. So the same thing, I had the same, very similar experience, and I was wondering, I normally get agitated, but where did this come from? Why was I, how was I able to remain calm? So my question is, why did that happen? What is the reason for that to happen?
One of the reasons
is I was not thinking about that time.
Your voice is breaking because I was not thinking about what?
Thinking about Brahman at that time at all.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to then think about Brahman. No. I thought about God and I became calm. Is that what you're saying? You don't have to think about
I didn't. God at that time.
Your voice is breaking. I can't get the middle part.
Sorry, I was saying that I did not even think about God at that time, but I was able to remain calm. So later on, I was wondering how did that happen?
Right.
You know, so how was that possible for that moment to flash like that at that moment and not at other times? So what was the reason for that?
That is what we're saying, like lightning, you know, when you see lightning in the sky, It is so suddenly, right? See, one thing you must know that you are Brahman even at this point. You are Brahman. So it is not like you have to keep thinking of Brahman, because thinking you do of who is somebody other than you.
Yes.
I think of my job. I think of my car. I think of my friend. That is other. I am only Brahman. So I cannot be thinking of like Brahman that way. But what happens is, as we progress in our studies, you know, and as the mind purifies, more the mind purifies, the more the substratum is exposed. I just now said, what is mind? Thought is a disturbance on that substratum, which we are, okay, which is the supreme reality. So what is purification of the mind? The agitations are reducing. Okay, purification of mind is reduction of agitations. When the agitations reduce, this peaceful substratum which is there, it starts showing now automatically. It's, see, the Vivek Churamani Bhagwan Shankaracharya has given the example. There is a pond of water and it's all covered with moss. So you don't see the water, right? Because that moss is there. But there are times when maybe there is a breeze, or maybe the person might go and just remove the moss. That is what happens. You don't have to be thinking of Brahman. But what will happen is, even in the circumstances outside, which would have probably in previous days caused agitation, this mind, because of it being so pure, purified to a certain extent, the agitation doesn't come and the substratum is exposed. And that is that peace that is coming from there. That is what needs to be understood. What I think is, I was thirsty, I drank water, now I'm at peace. And because of the water, I became peaceful. That is not what is happening. Because of the water, that agitation of thirst is subsiding. And when that agitation subsides, the substratum is exposed. It's like as though revealed, as though, Eva, right? Because it is all pervading. But so that it doesn't have to be. There are, that is the practice stages. That's why some people say, when I get agitated, then I do Namasmarana. People take the name of the Lord to calm down. And now you've progressed. So you don't even need the name of the Lord. The mind is so purified that it will become peaceful. It will remain peaceful in circumstance. Or what happens at an earlier stage, the mind gets agitated, but after a little while, it calms down. If you see people, other people who do not have this background, they remain agitated for a long time. I know people who have been, just now somebody told me, she was in depression for 2 years after her husband passed. She told me to my face, right? I said, I don't even have the luxury to be in depression for 2 years. Who's going to take my classes? She said, you have come back very quickly. I was in depression for 2 years. I said, I don't have that luxury, unfortunately. Right? But it's not a question of luxury. It is a question of the knowledge that you come back. You get agitated, but you come back. And then there is a stage when you don't get agitated at all. Now there is a stage when maybe there are some things which you will not get agitated and some things you will. And then the stage will be, no matter what happens, you won't get agitated. You see, those are stages. So first you need the Namasmarana or something to hold on to. Now you don't need. So you're going ahead. That is what it is. It is not like, you shouldn't think like, oh, I wasn't even thinking. Because when things happen suddenly, you don't think of the Lord.
Yeah.
You don't think. No. But you have to remember that you are the Lord. You are that, right?
Thank you, Jayaji. One more question. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, of course.
So you were thinking that for the bhakta, the bhakta can actually, the bhakta can think of, can objectify Brahman and see, imagine Brahman in the form of his or her Ishta Devata.
Correct.
So that is again the dual.
Yes.
So how can we progress from there?
Yeah.
So no, you said that is also. way. So how could we progress from there?
Yeah. See, with bhakta, what happens is the bhakta doesn't even want progress. Who gives him progress is the Ishta Devata. Now you will see it in Narad Bhakti. So that is the beauty of bhakti. That bhakta, he will keep on. What happens is, chapter 9 also says, Bhagavan says, people pray to me ekatvena or prathaktvena. Ekatvena means the jnani who is looking at the substratum, which is the same in all. But prathaktvena is one person is thinking of this as Shiva, Vishnu, Krishna, Rama, etc. But you have to understand, if it is a true devotee, he knows that there is no difference between Shiva and Vishnu and Ram and Krishna. There is no difference between me and the deity. He knows if we, when we talk of the supreme bhakta, huh, the supreme devotion. Okay. But if a person who is practicing devotion, the Ishta Devata is Shiva or anybody, if that devotion is real, then he is devoted to Lord Shiva, but he will never have the thought that Shiva is superior to Krishna or to Vishnu. That thought will not be there. If that thought is there, then that devotion is not real. Then that doesn't even count. Okay. So even though he maintains the duality, in later stages, that Ishta Devata only will reveal her or his oneness with the devotee. This happened in the life of Ramakrishna Paramahansa. See, Ramakrishna Paramahansa was always talking to the Divine Mother, right? And always the duality was there. If the Divine Mother is appearing in front of him and he's talking, there's duality. Then what happens is this: his guru came into his life, Totapuri. And Totapuri told him that you must experience that oneness. And I will initiate into that. So Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he went to the, he said, let me ask Divine Mother if I should, you know, do this, what you're telling me. Because he was a great devotee. He went to the Divine Mother and the mother said, I have only sent Totapuri. Now you better go and experience that oneness with me. So this is what the Ishta Devata will do for the devotee. Same thing happened with Namdev. Namdev was very used to talking to Vitthal Bhagwan. Namdev is a Marathi, you know. See, he was a little kid and his father was the priest in the temple of Vitthal. Vitthal Bhagwan is a avatar of Vishnu, Vishnu Bhagwan. And the father was a priest. So one day it so happened that the father had no time to take Nevedya to Vitthal Bhagwan. And Namdev was only 8 years old. So he says, I don't have the time. Can you please take this Nevedya for Vitthal Bhagwan? So he says, okay. So he goes, the child goes, Namdev goes there and it becomes evening and late at night and late night. Then the father gets worried. Where did my son go? So he goes to the temple and Namdev is sitting there with the food. He says, you've offered Nevedya, now come home. So Namdev says, no, you asked me to feed the Lord. Now Lord has to come and eat. So father says, no, it doesn't happen like that. You just leave it there and you... He says, no. So the father goes home and the child sits through the night, the 8-year child. Then Bhagwan comes himself and he eats the food. So what happens then is every single time Namdev is asked to take the food, Namdev goes and sits and he says, now you come and eat. And Bhagwan comes. That is the beauty of the bhakta. So Bhagwan comes each time. So then what happens is Namdev becomes a young man. And this goes on for years. It goes on. Every time he is asked to take food, he's like, yeah, I will take. He will sit. Bhagwan will come. Bhagwan will eat that food. Then he will bring the thali home. So when he grows up, he's in company of Jnaneshwar. They're all contemporaries. Sant Jnaneshwar, Muktabai, you know, Gora Kumbhar, all these. So they say, let's see who is very mature. And Gora Kumbhar is, Kumbhar means the one who makes pot. He's a potter. And you know how they test the pots, right? They, you know, that like they, yeah, correct. So what he says is, so what Gora Kumbhar tells Muktabai is, go test all the pots. Pots means the heads of all the people sitting here and tell me which one is kacha, you know, like. So she goes on doing this to, and she says, oh, pakka. And when she comes to Namdev, she says, this one is kacha, she says. And Namdev gets very angry. He says, Bhagwan talks to me. Bhagwan doesn't even talk to you guys. And you're telling me that my head is kacha. So he gets angry. He goes to Vitthal Bhagwan. And he asks Bhagwan. He says, Bhagwan, how come they're saying like that? Then Vitthal Bhagwan says to him, I talk to you, but you do not know me. He says, I know you. You talk to me. How? No. Bhagwan says, no. Now you go to this. He's a mochi, you know, cobbler. This person, I forget his name. So he says, you go to him and he will tell you who I am. So Namdev, in an angry fist, he walks there. And he, now this person, this other person whom Vitthal Bhagwan sends him to, is sleeping in the Shiva temple with his feet on the Shivling. Now Namdev again gets angry. What do you mean? You put your feet on the God. He says, you know, I'm too old. So you put my feet where there is no God. Where there is no God, right? So Namdev says, of course, there is, you know, there's so much space in the temple. Why do you have to? So he moves his legs. He moves the legs, the Shivling moves. He moves the legs again, the Shivling moves. The Shivling moves, wherever he moves the leg. Then he tells him, you think God is not there? You understand? So Namdev thought that form came and that is God. And God talks to me, so I know God. But he doesn't know the oneness. And this is what the Bhagwan will do for the devotee. That is Bhagwan's way of teaching the devotee. So when you say that there is duality, how will you progress in devotion? Don't even worry about progress. If your devotion is real, God will take you. He will carry you. God just carry. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagwan Shri Krishna says, I am a servant of my devotees. He doesn't say I am a servant of my jnanis. Jnani, he doesn't say I am a servant. No, only devotee. The one who is my devotee, I become his servant. So what is the meaning of servant? Whatever the devotee says. Therefore, Prahlad says, God is in the pole, right? God comes out of the pole. Pillar, right? Because he says, my devotee has uttered these words, that I am in the pillar, then I have to come out of the pillar. Whatever my devotee says, I will do. So this is the beauty in bhakti. That's why it is very beautiful. That's why you should not worry. If there is duality, that's fine. But please, like I told you, don't have the duality by thinking that this deity is superior to the other deity. That, if you have, then no. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay. Shall we close? We'll meet next. I think next week. Yeah. We may finish or this. Anyway, before I come to Calgary, we'll be done with this text. Okay? All right. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnamidam.